114 countries have made very clear that it is their expectation that the Taliban will permit freedom of travel going past August 31st.
The Biden administration says it will continue to work to bring U.S. citizens and Afghan allies out of the country. It's Tuesday, August 31st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. You can also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, security around Kabul under Taliban control. Catastrophic damage reported in the wake of Hurricane Ida. Groom details terrifying exit from Afghanistan. Baby becomes Fiji's youngest COVID-19 victim. And Afghan athletes make it to Tokyo Paralympics. It's all on today's VOA Asia.
I'm Jim Stevenson. We begin with new developments as U.S. military leaders have announced the last U.S. plane has departed Afghanistan, ending 20 years of U.S. combat missions in the country in what has been called America's longest war. General Kenneth McKenzie made the announcement late Monday afternoon, Washington time.
The military phase of this operation has ended. The diplomatic sequel to that will now begin. And I believe our Department of State is going to work very hard to allow any American citizens that are left, and we think the citizens that were not brought out number in the very low hundreds. I believe that we're going to be able to get those people out. I think we're also going to negotiate very hard and very aggressively to get our other Afghan partners out. The military phase is over, but our desire to bring these people out remains as intense as it was before. The weapons have just shifted, if you will, from the military realm to the diplomatic realm, and the Department of State will now take the lead.
He described the largest non-combatant evacuation in the U.S. military's history.
Since August the 14th, over an 18-day period, U.S. military aircraft have evacuated more than 79,000 civilians from Hamid Karzai International Airport. That includes 6,000 Americans and more than 73,500 third country nationals and Afghan civilians. This last category includes special immigrant visas, consular staff, at-risk Afghans, and their families. In total, U.S. and coalition aircraft combined to evacuate more than 123,000 civilians, which were all enabled by U.S. military service members who were securing and operating the airfield. On average, we have evacuated more than 7,500 civilians per day over the 18 days of the mission, which includes 16 full days of evacuations and more than 19,000 on a single day. These numbers do not include the roughly 5,000 service members and their equipment that were sent to Afghanistan to secure the airfield and who were withdrawn at the conclusion of our mission.
Despite much of Afghanistan being overrun by the very group the United States ousted 20 years ago, General McKenzie said the Taliban were helpful as the evacuation came to a close.
They established a firm perimeter outside of the airfield to prevent people from coming on the airfield during our departure. And we've worked that with them for a number of days. They did not have direct knowledge of our time of departure. We chose to keep that information very restricted. But they were actually very helpful and useful to us as we closed down operations. And on the last airplane out was General Chris Donahue, the commander of the 82nd Airborne Division, and my ground force commander there. And he was accompanied by our charge A, Ambassador Russ Wilson. So they came out together. So the state and defense team came out on the last aircraft and were, in fact, the last people to stand on the ground, step on the airplane.
The general said the highest levels of security were maintained until the end.
The threats from ISIS were very real, very concerning. And so we did a number of things. We had overwhelming U.S. air power overhead should there have been any challenge to our departure. And again, there was absolutely no question we were not going to be challenged by the Taliban. If we were going to be challenged, it was going to be by ISIS. And I think some of the things we've done yesterday, particularly the strike, and other things we've done have disrupted their ability to conduct that attack planning. But they remain a very lethal force, and I think we would assess that probably there are at least 2,000 hardcore ISIS fighters in Afghanistan now. And of course, many of those come from the prisons that were opened a few days ago. So that number is up and is probably as high as it's ever been in quite a while. And that's going to be a challenge for the Taliban, I believe, in the days ahead.
General McKenzie briefly reflected on 20 years in Afghanistan. As a soldier, a father, and now a general.
I've been there a couple times. My son's been there a couple times. I was very conflicted, actually. But I would tell you, I was pretty much focused on the task at hand. I'll have days ahead to actually think about that. but there was just so much going on in this headquarters, and we were so completely focused on getting our troops out and the days before getting our citizens out and vulnerable Afghans to the best of our ability, that I did not have a lot of time for reflection. I'm sure I will do that in the future, but right now I'm pretty much consumed with the operational task at hand. That's a good question, and I am going to be thinking about that in the days ahead.
We have more on Afghanistan and other stories as VOA Asia continues with Amy Hybels.
Be sure to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. China to severely limit video game access to minors. Duterte's top aide declines Philippine presidential nomination. In Thailand, aerospace engineers turn their skills to COVID-19. Australia approves Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine for children over 12. Dramatic power shift in Afghanistan seen as strategic setback for India. Additional coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Twitter, Instagram, and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. The Pentagon remains tight-lipped about its final operations in Afghanistan and has not specified when the withdrawal will be completed ahead of the 31st deadline. International Edition's Steve Miller speaks to VOA Pakistan and Afghanistan Bureau Chief Aisha Tanzim in Islamabad about the latest on the ground in Afghanistan, including the Taliban presence in Kabul at this time.
What we found out is that the attack was on a vehicle that was moving towards the airport that was suspected. So the U.S. carried out an airstrike to destroy that vehicle. And obviously, the Taliban were informed about it because we had a message from the Taliban spokesman, Zabiullah Mujahid, as well, that this was a U.S. airstrike. And they said they're investigating the incident. So U.S., they're informing the Taliban when they're carrying out these attacks. As for the condition of the airport, the Taliban are now strictly controlling all access to the airport in Kabul. They have blocked the roads leading to the airport. They have put up checkpoints. They've increased their presence and security. They're not letting any Afghans go through anymore. Only foreigners can cross the checkpoints to go towards the airport. And even the perimeter as well has been pushed out further away from the airport in order to increase security. So gone are the scenes that we saw earlier of thousands of people clamoring to get inside and creating stampedes. That is all a thing of the past now. Now it's orderly, only buses are going to the airport and Taliban are checking lists of passengers that they have with them.
What is the security situation in and around Kabul?
Well, the biggest threat was around the airport because a lot of people had gathered, so it was an easy target. The United States did carry out some attacks in Nangarhar against ISIS targets. The security around Kabul right now is completely under Taliban control, and the Taliban claim that they're going to investigate any attacks in the city. However, that does not mean the city is safe. This is the challenge for the Taliban. They convince the world that they are capable of handling security and making sure no other terrorist group operate from the soil of Afghanistan. Now is the time when they'll have to prove that they actually have the capacity to do it.
That was VOA Pakistan and Afghanistan Bureau Chief Aisha Tanzim speaking with International Edition's Steve Miller. Still ahead on VOA Asia, Hurricane Ida makes landfall on the U.S. Gulf Coast. Happening now in Asia, Pyongyang appears to have restarted a nuclear reactor widely believed to have produced plutonium for nuclear weapons. The UN Atomic Agency, the IAEA, said in an annual report the agency uses satellite imagery to monitor North Korea as the country expelled IAEA inspectors back in 2009. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. In the U.S., rescuers set out in hundreds of boats and helicopters to reach people trapped by floodwaters, and utility crews mobilized on Monday after Hurricane Ida swamped the Louisiana coast. One of the most powerful hurricanes ever to hit the U.S. mainland weakened into a tropical storm overnight as it pushed inland over the state of Mississippi with torrential rain and strong winds. Ida has been blamed for at least one death, someone hit by a falling tree outside Baton Rouge. The governor's office said damage to the power grid appeared to be catastrophic. While it was still early, there were no immediate reports of the catastrophic flooding New Orleans officials had feared, and the governor said that for the most part, the levees performed well. Hurricane Ida made landfall in Louisiana on Sunday, arriving 16 years after Hurricane Katrina's onslaught in 2005. As VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports, memories of Katrina still loom large.
This was the view from inside the hurricane hunting plane Miss Piggy, panning the eye of Hurricane Ida. That video and this satellite imagery come from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, showing Ida bearing down on Louisiana. Area business owners boarded up windows ahead of Sunday's landfall. At a virtual briefing with federal emergency personnel on Saturday, U.S. President Joe Biden warned those in the region to stay alert throughout the storm.
I'm urging the people of the area to pay attention and be prepared. I want to say it again, pay attention and be prepared. Have supplies for your household on hand. Follow the guidance from local authorities. And if you have to move to shelter, make sure you wear a mask and try to keep some distance because we're still facing a highly contagious Delta variant as well.
Louisiana currently has less than 41% of its population vaccinated against the coronavirus, according to USAFacts.org. Still, some residents aren't even considering an evacuation.
We're going to stay because, you know, just in case if it's a bad hurricane, people going to want loot. So we got to keep our eye on the store.
Other residents have no plan to tempt fate.
We've decided to take off, yeah, because just like with Hurricane Katrina, we're not trying to be here for the disaster. So we ain't taking no chances, we leaving.
Ida's landfall in the United States comes exactly 16 years after Hurricane Katrina ravaged the Gulf Coast. More than home to millions of Americans, the area is an industrial hub with three ports and a nuclear power plant. Speaking Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation, Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards said lots of people listened to expert advice.
It appears that hundreds of thousands of people took the opportunity yesterday to leave, especially in those low-lying areas in southeast Louisiana along the coast. Those that are not protected by our much enhanced hurricane and storm risk reduction system. We asked people to make sure that when they went to bed last night, they were prepared to ride out the storm and that they would go to bed where they intended to ride out the storm.
The governor says the most populated areas should be protected from storm surges following a $14 billion investment in the years since Katrina. Hurricane Ida smashed into Cuba Saturday on its way to the United States, flooding roads and agricultural areas in its path. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Cambodia ramps up COVID-19 inoculations nationwide, including booster shots for those already vaccinated, as it experiences a spike attributed to the Delta variant of the coronavirus. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Afghan-American Haseeb Kamal had been married only one day when Kabul fell to Taliban control. His terrifying exit from Afghanistan meant leaving his new wife and most of his family behind. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti has his exclusive story for VOA.
The shoving of the crowds is what Haseeb Kamal remembers most.
It looked like the world is ending. That's how it felt.
He was at the Abbey Gate at Kabul Airport when he became separated from his family members. Years ago, Kamal was a translator for U.S. forces in Afghanistan. He left his home country on a special immigrant visa in 2014 and became a U.S. citizen. But someone called him back to Afghanistan this year.
I'm glad that I found her.
On August 14th, Kamal was married. The next day, Kabul fell. He knew they all had to leave. He and his family surged through the masses at the airport gate, waving his American passport at U.S. Marines. But only three would get through.
And I start pushing my sister in the crowd. And I told people, like, hey, she's sick. Could you move, please?
Along the way, they witnessed helpless children and heavy sticks used as weapons. Memories just now affecting Bibi Sarah Kamal, who was in her last year of medical school.
My brother was behind me. We would sit down to avoid being hit. There were many children whose heads were broken or their faces were hit. Even some children were trampled to death.
Bibi Sarah made it through the gate into the airport. So did Kamal and their dad. Hours later, they boarded a C-17, a U.S. military cargo plane, for Qatar. There, they stayed 3 days without showers or a change of clothes. From Qatar, they flew to Ramstein, Germany, and finally boarded a flight to Dulles International Airport in Virginia. Their 9-day journey was over, but Kamal is still haunted by leaving his mother, siblings, and new bride behind.
I had one mission to get my family out, and I failed. And it's bothering me, honestly. It's bothering me, really.
Even in this country, the Kamal family is separated. Their dad is here at Fort Lee, where processing will take up to 3 weeks. Their dad has no papers. He is a retired colonel with the Afghan army, but he destroyed any proof so the Taliban wouldn't know.
Even his uniforms, I helped them to burn them all.
As the brother and sister settle into a normal American routine, Kamal knows his family will live a much different life.
I would say there's no future for Afghanistan. And it's sad.
He calls his new wife about 3 times a day. They pledge to be together for life. And now Kamal wonders when they'll be able to start that new life. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Richmond, Virginia.
Making headlines in Asia. In Indonesia, hundreds of Jakarta area schools reopened on Monday for the first time since the start of the pandemic, after they passed a required educational testing procedure by the Jakarta Education Agency. Officials say COVID-19 cases in the country continue to decline from recent peaks. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, health authorities in Fiji say a 6-month-old baby has become the youngest victim of a worsening coronavirus outbreak. Hundreds of new infections are being reported every day, and officials have warned the virus was likely to remain in Fiji as an endemic disease like the common flu. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
Cases of COVID-19 have been reported across Fiji, a South Pacific archipelago that lies about 2/3 of the way from Hawaii to New Zealand. The government confirmed 396 new cases by late Sunday. The World Health Organization has reported more than 45,000 coronavirus cases in Fiji since the pandemic began, while Fijian health officials have said 479 people have died. The vast majority of fatalities have come since the latest outbreak began in April. Among the victims are a 6-month-old baby and an 11-year-old girl. Fiji's coronavirus emergency is centred on the main island of Viti Levu. So far, authorities have said the second largest island, Vanua Levu, has escaped the worst of the pandemic. However, former Fiji Health Minister Dr. Neil Sharma told Radio New Zealand that the island was ill-prepared should infections increase.
Vanua Levu has a much smaller population, but the health facilities are very limited. One divisional hospital in the north and a subdivisional hospital, rather small, they would eventually fall short of supplies. The virus has been moving faster than strategic planning has gone.
Senior officials fear that the coronavirus will never be eliminated in Fiji and will become endemic. About 1 million people live in Fiji. The government says more than 45% of eligible people were fully vaccinated, far more than in neighbouring Australia and New Zealand. In New Caledonia, doctors and employers have called for compulsory coronavirus inoculations, fearing a catastrophe if the Delta variant was to reach that South Pacific island nation. It closed its international borders in March last year and remains free of COVID-19. But just a third of the population of about 300,000 has been inoculated, according to authorities. The Kingdom of Tonga has also recorded no coronavirus cases. It's a different story in other parts of the Pacific. The US territory of Guam has reported 9,500 infections and 145 deaths since the pandemic began. Papua New Guinea has reported 18,000 COVID-19 cases and 192 fatalities, according to the WHO. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Afghanistan's two athletes finally made it to the Tokyo Paralympics on Sunday. The first week of the Paralympics in Tokyo have provided many highlights in and out of competition. Steve Ross joins us with more from the Japanese capital for VOA.
COVID-19 pandemic worries are declining somewhat for Paralympians and the nation of Japan. On Sunday, Tokyo tallied roughly 3,100 new cases for the week, down about 1,300 cases from the week before. On Thursday, one Games participant was reported to be hospitalized with COVID-19, though the symptoms were described as non-severe, and the case was the first of the Paralympics requiring hospitalization. If the Paralympics plays out as the Olympic Games did, most COVID-19 cases will not be among the athletes, but among contractors, officials, or volunteers. Afghanistan's two athletes finally made it to the Tokyo Paralympics on Sunday. The International Paralympic Committee described getting them to Japan for the Games as a major global operation. Flying Zaria Kudadadi and Hossein Razuli via France to Japan for a Saturday evening arrival. The Afghanistan flag appeared at Tuesday's opening ceremony, but it took the athletes a bit longer to join the competition. On Tuesday, sprinter Razuli will take part in the men's long jump, and on Thursday, Kudadi will compete in the women's under 49 kilogram taekwondo competition. Team USA's Nick Mayhew broke the Paralympic world record to win gold in the men's 100-meter T37 final on Friday at National Stadium in Tokyo. Mayhew is the first T37 classification runner, those with cerebral palsy, to break the 11-second barrier. He finished in 10.95 seconds, besting the Russian's Andrei Vadovin, who came in at 11.18 seconds. And Team USA's wheelchair racing legend Tatiana McFadden won her 18th Paralympic medal, taking the bronze in the women's T54 5,000-meter race on Saturday. And finally, American toy firm Mattel will issue a Paralympian Barbie. The doll is modeled after Francisca Mardones, former tennis star and now Chilean Paralympic team shot putter, discus and javelin thrower. Mardona's spinal damage keeps her in a wheelchair, but not down. The Barbie doll is part of the company's Shiro's product line, recognizing exemplary female figures. Join us next time for more Paralympic highlights. Steve Ross for VOA News, Tokyo.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Chris Cascale, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Please stay safe and make it a good day.